Welcome to my monthly podcast series titled Becoming a Sage. My name is Jan Freed, but you can call me Dr. Jan. In this series, I interview people to seek wisdom about living and leading a life on purpose. My passion is helping people find purpose and meaning in their lives on a daily basis for the rest of their lives, a concept I call breadcrumb legacy. I'm also on a mission to retire the word retirement. We are not retiring from life, but we're moving on to something else. And I believe it takes time and intentional thought to successfully move on to what's next in life. Today, I'm interviewing David Stewart. David is the founder and face of Ageist. He's a passionate champion and leading authority on the modern 50-plus lifestyle and the mindset and aspirations that drive this influential demographic. He recently keynoted the Global Wellness Summit in Singapore, and prior to launching Ageist, David enjoyed an award-winning career as a photographer specializing in people-oriented advertising. So for more information about David, please refer to the bio posted at the end of this podcast. Well, welcome to the series, David.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I learned about David from a virtual happy hour between him and Chip Conley, who's the founder of the Modern Elder Academy. And I discovered Chip from reading an Harvard Business Review article about the time he spent at Airbnb. And that was, he wrote the article, I think, before he started the Modern Elder Academy. And then I bought his book, Wisdom at Work. So I interviewed Chip last year. And so now I'm very excited to interview David today, and I subscribe to Ageist, his online website and media company. So, and the thing I noticed about Ageist is great photography. So great articles, but the articles have great photography. And I loved the one on Oaxaca because I have I've been there and I have a passion for Mexico. So I shared that with some of my friends. I forwarded that. So, well, great. Well, David, I've come up with some questions here, and I'm very interested in what you have to say. So sure. Before this pandemic, many people feared getting old, even the thought of getting older and particularly looking older. Now we fear death, and death is a reality. It could be. So you've done a lot of work in this area. Tell us about fear and what we should do about it.
Go towards it.
Yeah, like lean in or, yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I don't think that going towards like intentionally infecting yourself with COVID is a good idea.
Right.
But I think that, you know, the idea that we're, fear is a good thing. So my feeling about fear is it's a very useful, like if you don't have fear, you know, who knows, you walk in front of a truck. So to me, what I have to do is I have to sort of make friends with my fear.
Uh-huh.
Like I'm never going to eliminate my fear. My fear is with me all the time, but it's sort of like this other entity. It's like, it just kind of comes along with me. And so what I have to do is I just have to say, okay, little buddy, like this is going to be okay. And really the only thing my fear listens to is experience. Mm-hmm. So I have to prove to my fear that whatever the thing I'm afraid of is really nothing. And then fear can say, oh, okay, we're okay on that one. Here, let's go look at this other thing. You should be afraid of that, whatever it is. So generally my greatest fears are of the self-centered variety. So shame, failure. I mean, it's not the big stuff, you know, like I have a healthy fear of keeping myself safe.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, that's a different sort of thing. These other ones, so the fear that like, I'm not going to be liked, like you won't like me. Maybe I'm going to fail on this podcast today. That's ridiculous. You know, but these
are, you know, experience. So I'm sure it's going to be great,
but I still have a fear, right? Mm-hmm. it's less than, what it's been. So that's, I hope I answered your question there on fear.
No, that's good. That's good. Well, you know, working remotely was happening before this social isolation was required. But now most people are working from home unless they're considered like essential workers. What does this tell us about the future of work? How do you see this affecting, you know, as we go forward?
That is a really interesting question. And I get asked this a lot, and truthfully, my thoughts on it change every couple of weeks, but I can tell you where I'm at now.
Okay. So
I think that this is going to impact the kind of houses people buy. Where do you live? Because the idea that you're going to probably spend part of your week working from home will probably be the case. It's not true for all businesses. So if you're in a very tactile, I don't know, you're in a motorcycle repair business, or you're in the fashion business, or you're something that requires you touching things, you'll be there probably more than other people. But I think that this is going to have a real impact on people's commutes. So I live in Los Angeles.
Right.
And, you know, so most everybody, it's like an hour each way. So it's 2 hours of your day. That's going to be reevaluated. But I think on the flip side of that, Zoom is really weird. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what we realize about Zoom is right now I see you from the shoulders up and I see you smiling, but there's a little bit of a delay. But if there were 10 people on here, the human feedback I get off of Zoom is incredibly limited, right? I can hear your voice when you speak, but I can't, there's all this other information I'm losing, which brings me back to the first thing you asked me about, fear, right? So since I'm not getting all this feedback from you and my coworkers, the little voices in my head start chattering around about whatever, and I think that, you know, and God knows what. So I think these digital communication, Zoom, video calls are really great. I think it helps sort of slow, in a way, it makes people a little more efficient because it slows us down. But on the other hand, we're missing out on, I'm going to say probably 90% of human communication is gone because of the way we're doing this.
Mm-hmm. No, excellent. Very much. Well, we're stuck at home and service industries are really struggling. I heard it may be a couple of years before people feel comfortable traveling, particularly outside of the United States. What are you predicting about the future of travel?
Well, again, my thoughts are somewhat volatile on this. Mm-hmm. I think business travel is going to be radically reevaluated. You know, I know I spoke to somebody last week. His yearly travel budget for his company was $500,000. He's in a different country every 3 days. Uh-huh. So I'm sure him and his company are having a hard reevaluation of that right now. Mm-hmm. Will people travel again? Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that I was in New York City during 9/11. So the first plane came right over my building.
Oh, wow.
And I remember, you just don't forget something like that. And I think that what's going on, like with COVID now, people are not going to forget this.
No.
But like, would I have gotten on an airplane within the first couple months of that? No, I would not have. But, you know, then there's the TSA and, you know, you kind of adjust. I think that the sense of reaching out to seeing other places, especially like we've been in, you know, everybody's world is compressed to like, whatever, like 1,000 square feet. Mm-hmm. So what happens when we get into a period of more relaxed time? I think people are going to travel. I think they're going to travel more intentionally. Mm-hmm. I think in the very near future, and I'm talking about the next like year or two, travel will probably be within national boundaries. So I think there's going to be a lot more like, let's take the kids to Yellowstone than let's pack the family to the Maldives or something. Mm-hmm. But I think that'll come back. I think we're social animals. We're curious animals. We like gotten to see other things. I think it's going to be adjusted in some way. Mm-hmm. But I think it'll still be there.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned 9/11 because I was talking with someone just a couple weeks ago from New York City. I have a son who lives there, but it was somebody else. And they were saying how the big difference is in 9/11, people were encouraged to come together. You know, we have to come together as a community. And I think what's so devastating about this, and particularly people who are losing loved ones, whether it's to COVID-19 or not, they're, you know, people die from other reasons, or tragic, you know, accidents, we can't come together. And I think that is what is so devastating about all of this. So, well, you and I both study aging, and every one of us is getting older by the day, and you and I know that. What do you see as the future for senior living communities, or are we not going to go to these communities as people have in the past?
Well, I think that we need to be careful about generalizing. Mm-hmm. It's one of the great mistakes. I was on a big Zoom thing the other day for a senior living conference, and somebody said, well, your people are not the typical whatever. And I said, please define typical to me. And so I think we need to, as people get older, their needs and their values, their aspirations really dramatically diverge. There will be, I think there will always be people who want to, you know, play golf and drink themselves to death. Like, you know, Jimmy Buffett's thing, like, sold out like 10 times. So that's a certain kind of person. Uh-huh. And right on. If you want to do that, have at it. I do think that the idea of senior living, I think we also have to be careful about that, because there are medical imperatives where some people need help. Mm-hmm. I do think the idea of like-minded communities can be really appealing to people, because, as you were saying earlier, this sense of isolation. Mm-hmm. So, I, you know, that's like a big plus. I'm seeing more people intentionally creating intentional communities. So mm-hmm. groups of people deciding to, like, oh, we're all going to live in this neighborhood. I think the senior living industry is, you know, it's a very difficult place to be right now. So it's about keeping their people alive right now.
Yes.
Like, for all of us, right? And I would say that, you know, a lot of the people that we work with are doing an excellent job on that. To me, what really needs to change there is the bar for people like us is a lot higher. Mm-hmm. So for us, I tell the clients that I work with, it's like, how can you help your people become the best versions of themselves?
Yes.
Versus just, you know, okay, they're alive and they've got food today and they can, you know, play checkers or whatever. I think if you can create some kind of facility that's aimed around that, mm-hmm. well, that's pretty appealing. Yeah, make me the best. I want the best version of David you can create. Let's do that.
Yeah.
That's super interesting to me.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Well, as I mentioned in the introduction, I'm really into this legacy work. Huh? And when I say the word legacy, what story or impression comes to your mind? And how would you define legacy?
Well, legacy is something I don't think about, truthfully.
Okay.
It's something I know Chip thinks about it. And last night, you know, Alex was talking a lot about it. To me, I have there's so much more that I want to get done. I feel like I'm only, you know, like a quarter of the way through the things that I want to get done. And I guess if you were to force me to a quarter and say, what do you want your legacy to be? I would say, you know, he was helpful. Like, I learned uh-huh. something from him. He was a helpful fellow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I always like to ask, what else should I have asked that I didn't ask that you would like people to know? Because, you know, AGIST is a great source of information, great resources. You know, what's your main message that you want people to remember here? Words of wisdom.
You know, I get a lot of people, they come to me and they say, I'm such and such age, I can't get a job, this is terrible, it's ageism, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I, first of all, that's not true. My head of brand relations, who's a woman who's 59, got poached by another company 2 days ago because, so that's not true. I got to replace her.
Right.
So what I think is that hard stuff requires hard work. And I tell people, like, you can't do anything about what other people think about your age. Like, you can't, in the same way, maybe some people don't like 61-year-old white guys. There's nothing I can do about that. But what I can control is my actions. What am I focusing on and what am I doing? How hard am I learning new things? Do I have the false belief that I do not have the capacity to do this? Look at that first. And we all have that. I had that. I still have that about a lot of things I feel I'm not capable of. It is not true. We can learn everything that I do today, I did not know 5 years ago. I was a photographer. Oh. I now run a media company.
Uh-huh.
Everything digital, I had to learn. I'd never spoken in front of people. I'd never written anything. I'd never done anything like I do now. I had to learn all that. Mm-hmm. Back then, I thought I was incapable of that. That was mm-hmm. false. That was a delusion. And I think before we start blaming what's going on out external to us, we need to take a little responsibility about where we're at and what our part of that is. And are these delusions of incapacity really just an excuse to justify where we're at? Mm-hmm. That's a hard one. That's a really hard one to swallow.
Uh-huh.
But I know I'm in that camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to, you know, that's my problem. That's my challenge that I got to take care of.
Yeah. No, that's excellent. Well, you've given us a lot to think about, David. And I like to say the emphasis in this series is on learning how to make the rest of life the best of life.
Yeah.
So may the rest be the best for you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's really wonderful to be here. I've really enjoyed it.